Good evening. It is 5 o'clock and you are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, 90.9 on cable and on the web at www.cfrc.ca. We are broadcasting from the basement of Carruthers Hall at Queen's University in Kingston on Turtle Island. Hello, listeners. You are tuned into Radio 613 here on CFRC. I'm your host, Malka.
And co-host, Avi, here in studio with you.
And we're very pleased to be, or I guess I should say, I'm pleased to be back on the show following some time away and some time in Toronto at the recent protests against the G20. Good to be back.
It's good to be back for sure. It's quite the weekend. We're going to recount a little bit of it, and although not too much, there's been a lot of coverage on CFRC, thankfully, and it's maybe still in the processing mode for some of us. But coming up on the show, we've got an interview that I did with a bunch of folks from Philadelphia when I attended the U.S. Assembly of Jews in Detroit just before the World Social Forum. Basically just picked up on the fact that there was countless amounts of people from Philadelphia and sort of wanted to figure out what was going on over there. So some really interesting talk about community building in Philadelphia, some Havira, spiritual reclamation work that's happening, and prayer that's happening, as well as various forms of solidarity work. So yeah, I'm looking forward to airing that for folks.
So before we get to that, maybe we'll just share a little bit of some of, you know, just some snippets of our experiences in Toronto last weekend, or 2 weekends ago, sorry. You know, for those of you who have been tuning into Alternative Frequency or who tuned into The Massive on Monday evening or some other programming on CFRC, you've probably heard already some of the more critical reporting from the protests against the G20 in Toronto last month. But, you know, I'll just mention to you, you know, that I was in Toronto, and, you know, though there's been a lot of debate in the sort of mainstream media around the use of force of the police, or, you know, whether or not the police were legitimate in their use of excessive force and excessive powers of arrest and detention, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, and contrasting the police's actions with the actions of the so-called illegitimate protesters. I think that something that has been, you know, one sort of really basic piece of information that has been totally missing from any of the analysis that I've come across in the mainstream media is the fact that the only sort of group of people that were using violence in a big way 2 weekends ago, in a physical sense, were the police. And so, you know, all else aside, whether people agree with people breaking windows, or whether people even agree with the various sort of critical analyses that the different groups of protesters were sharing, be it an anti-capitalist analysis or a sort of critique of whatever, you know, maternal health policies, or and on and on and on and on. That all those facts aside, the only sort of people that I saw laying a hand and hitting and beating people were police. And I didn't see, and there were mm-hmm. thousands and thousands of protesters, and I didn't see a single protester lift a finger against another. And so when I've been listening to all the media accounts of what happened, that's sort of what's, that's, that the absence of that comparison has been striking, and I wanted to add it to the critical response. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
I think you're right. No one's actually argued that protesters threatened other protesters or people in the streets, civilians, whatever you want to call them. No one's even making those arguments. By contrast, what I saw there was an incredible number of people taking care of each other under circumstances of repression, of attempts to restrict people's movement on, you know, so-called public space, and people sticking together, people, you know, making sure if anyone needs anything, water, food, medical attention, and whatnot. Those are some really strong moments I took away from the weekend, amidst some traumatic moments that I think a lot of people experienced of state and police violence. You know, having seen just friends being detained for 24 hours without, you know, just in horrible conditions. So, but as you said, Malka, that's been reported. And yeah, I wanted to go ahead.
Yeah, you know, if people want to know more, so if people want to access more sort of critical reporting on the G20 and the protests around the G20, I'll just quickly recommend a website. It's 2010.mediacoop.ca, and it's got lots of links, articles, videos, and tweets. So if you'd like a different perspective from CBC or
CTV,
we're shaking our fists, any of the other mainstream stations, check it out.
So I also wanted to share with listeners an experience that I had on the weekend, and it was sort of amongst all of the fear that the police was sort of trying to spread throughout the general public, and especially people who came to protest G20 and its policies and the occupation of Toronto. So I actually experienced sort of violence from someone in the street, and it's a story that I'll tell quickly that involves profanity. So for the next 5 to 7 minutes, please tune out if you don't want to hear that, but it's part of the story. It involves basically an anti-Semitic attack on the street. So I was riding my bicycle around Queen and Dundas in Toronto on the weekend, on the Sunday of the G20, and I had pulled up on my bicycle on the sidewalk not Queen and Dundas, Broadview and Dundas. So on Broadview, and a car pulls up at the stoplight, and there's a woman in the driver's seat wearing an England jersey, soccer jersey, and a man wearing a Germany jersey just after the World Cup game. And so the man turns to me, and I'm on my bicycle and dressed as I am now, t-shirt and pants and my yarmulke, as I often wear. And he turns to me and says, "You're a fucking Jew." And it's my attempt at a British accent. This is a very large, white British man. And so I turn to him and I say, "What's your point?" And after a second, I realize he's not joking. So I say, "Fuck you." And he bolts out of his car at that point and charges after me, swinging. So luckily I had my bike, which made me a lot larger than I am. And he's sort of attacking me, and I'm jabbing him with my front tire. And I'm saying, "What's your problem? What's the matter with you?" And he said, "You said fuck you." And I said, and I say, "You called me a fucking Jew." So that sort of went on for a little bit, and I'm sort of trying to make a little bit of noise. And eventually he backs away, and I sort of, in anger, tell him to take off his Germany shirt and call him a Nazi and whatnot. And he runs across the street and to where the person who was driving had pulled over. So that was definitely the most overt physical encounter of anti-Semitism that I've experienced. And definitely within the context of all the rage of the weekend and sort of fascism of a police state, it was quite the accompaniment to all that. And unfortunately, one of the few times on the weekend that I was not with my sort of very solid group of friends who, but, you know, thank God everything was good. And I felt, you know, good about all in all being safe after that and how I was able to respond. I think having all the anger in me from so much of the police presence sort of helped me through that in a strange way. But it also sort of awakened me to the realities of, and a reminder of why I'm anti-nationalist, because I could tell this guy was juiced up on nationalism after, you know, Germany game, and he saw the guy wearing a yarmulke, and he was ready to make some noise. So, but it also, you know, just again after the weekend, you know, and Malka and I were just talking about the need for sort of taking care of each other and how that was going on through the weekend. And this is just another example of how all of us in community and need to come together and across like lines of difference to protect each other. You know, we can't rely on the police, that's clear. You know, certainly not going to go to the police in that scenario, and not going to rely on the state. And I'm not going to report, you know, at one point I might have reported such a thing to a Jewish agency. But at this point in time in Canada, groups like the B'nai B'rith, who seem to take control of statistics around anti-Semitism, end up time and time again using it to promote, especially post 9/11, to promote anti-Arab and anti-Islam racism. So that's not really an option either. I mean, and you can just see that all the time. They end up mentioning Hezbollah somehow when a synagogue is vandalized. You can see, I'll link on our website to instances of this in the paper, you know, without any evidence that this is the case. So anyway, these are some thoughts post that experience. yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Avi. I feel like you, that I wish there had been more of us there when that happened, but I also feel like when you shared that story with me at first, I was like, oh, you know, good job on your response. You know, you did good.
Well, you know, I do feel like it's a long way coming for me to be able to respond like that. I think, you know, I was thinking on the drive back how, you know, I would not have responded in a similar way maybe 10 years ago. And I know I haven't, because I've received probably similar sort of taunts growing up all the time. And I think it has to do with sort of working through a lot of internalized anti-Semitism that allowed me to respond that way. And a sort of pride and confidence that comes along with working through those things. And, you know, so although people in my community were not with me there, I know that yourself, Malka, and others have sort of helped me through a lot of those things. So, you know, it all comes together in the end. But so on that note, we'll just play a quick number before getting to our interview that we're going to go right into with Rad Jews from Philly. We'll play a track by Dinigunim, Solidarity. we're here just outside the U.S. Assembly of Jews Confronting Racism and Israeli Apartheid, just before the U.S. Social Forum in Detroit. I'm here with a bunch of folks from Philadelphia. So who's out on the lawn with us today?
Ben Landau-Beispiel.
Leela Macbeth.
Mendel Polish.
And Nova McGifford.
All right, and so it's a big Philadelphia contingent at the social, or I shouldn't say social, at the U.S. Assembly of Jews here. Just seems like an incredible number of people who are in Philadelphia and excited to be coming from there. The folks here with me, are you from Philadelphia, or have you moved there recently? People can just jump in.
I've lived in Philly my whole life.
Other folks?
I grew up in Philadelphia and then moved away for college and spent some time like in the Midwest after school, and then moved back recently.
I'm from San Francisco originally, and I moved to Philly almost 6 years ago, actually, in October. And one of the reasons why I moved there is because I knew that there was a strong base of anti-Zionist Jews, and I actually never really grew up in a largely populated Jewish community. So I lived in Austin, Texas, in between, and was wanting to do more of this organizing work with Jewish people and that were also rooted in a spiritual center as well.
Very similarly, I just had my 2-year anniversary of living in Philadelphia yesterday, and I also was living in Austin before Philadelphia and was feeling really, I was just coming to a place where I knew that I wanted to be engaged more in anti-Zionist work in a Jewish context, and it was really hard to do that work in Austin. I wanted to do it in a strong community, and moved to Philadelphia to find that community, which is exactly what I did. And surprisingly, it was surprisingly easy to find people, and then has been a pretty natural process of building that community and joining what's there and then strengthening and seeing how that grows in different ways.
Is that like rooted in a history? Are there radical Jewish histories in Philadelphia that people are building upon, or is it this new creative work? Or what do folks think?
I think that there is a large diasporic history in Philly, and my grandparents grew up there. My parents grew up there, and they moved to California when I was 2 from New Jersey, actually. And so I knew that there was a real legacy there of Jewish immigration, but that's clearly not rooted in a radical or leftist history. But I think that through the years, and I was editing a movie called Young Jewish and Left, and a lot of the folks that were part of that project lived in Philly, and there was a lot of the work that I was doing and a lot of the organizing work from Austin and from the Bay Area always kind of mapped back to Philly. So it just seemed like there was a growing group and population that was either flocking there or already lived there.
I think Philadelphia has a strong Jewish communist background, and I don't know a lot of the history, but I know that labor organizing is not none of this is new to Philadelphia, and it has manifested differently over time, and this is a particular moment in history where there is a really strong and a very large spectrum of people doing all kinds of work, but that now we see it coming out as anti-Zionism, and that movement is certainly strengthening and in our region.
Yeah, it's interesting, just for me, coming back to Philly and coming across folks who are doing anti-Zionist work in Philly was like all sort of a series of fortuitous events. Like, I moved back there just to be closer to home and also to do a community art program. And right around that time, just through a personal relationship, was the first time I was really, like, confronting Israel and Israeli policy and what was going on. And I happened to, start a program in community art with, and there was a professor there that I knew and another one that I didn't know, who all his classes really center around Israel and Palestine. And so the information was coming into my life from different directions. And once I got to a place where I felt motivated to look around me and find people who are doing this work outside of that class and the couple of folks that I know that weren't in the area, I feel like I really stumbled upon what was like a wealth of like information and organizers who were also, you know, really connecting like the spiritual reclamation work. I mean, that's you all, you know, and then a bunch of other folks in Philly who are older, that just seem to be really rooted in both, like, you know, doing organizing work, but also like cultivating like their own spaces. Yeah, and staying connected to each other.
Does it feel like there's like a supportive community? Is that community connected to radical movements or social movements outside of particularly Palestine solidarity work? And does the support come from there as well?
Yeah, I mean, Philadelphia, there are just a lot of Jews in general, and there's a very strong, there's the rabbinical, the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College, and there's just kind of this very large group of people that are thinking about Judaism, who are Jewish, who are dealing with or trying to reconcile their own traditions, and also they're like having politics that are about social justice and equality, and dealing, and so there's just more like a bigger group of people who are more open perhaps than some areas in the country, in the US and other places as well, where they may be a little bit more open to having these kinds of conversations. And so I think that is definitely useful and allows for some of these strategies of reaching out to Jewish communities and other non-Jewish communities as well. But there's definitely a lot of like the movement. So a lot of us do work with the group Philadelphia Jews for Just Peace, which is part of American Jews for Just Peace. And our work is a lot of it is the spiritual reclamation piece. And we are part of what we do is this Tu B'Shvat Seder and this style of reclaiming Jewish tradition and rituals and bringing it back into a Jewish context, and being able to reach, using that as a strategy for reaching other Jews, but also like building community and strengthening our community as anti-Zionist Jews to like nurture the work that we do and to root it and give us strength to push forward.
And I think that I know for me, the anti-Zionist community that I have is really intergenerational and really supports not only the work that we're doing for liberation in Palestine, but also is supportive for other work that we do in the communities that we live in. So, I mean, when I first moved to Philly, I was definitely not just doing anti-Zionist work, but was working in the prison industrial complex anti-prison industrial complex movement and the movement to free political prisoners, and also I was an adult educator in the prison system. And I think that the community that I was in, the anti-Zionist community that I was in, was really supportive of that other work, and kind of helped me have a stronger base of myself and like my place of operating from in order to do that other work in the community that felt really critical. I also think that because it does seem to be, we do have a larger body of observant Jews that are doing this work than anywhere else I've ever lived or any other experiences I've had in communities of anti-Zionist Jews. And so we have kind of created lots of ritual that, kind of like what Nova was talking about, like around that are both political and have a lot of spiritual reclamation components that support the politics and further some of the movement work. Like we, last year for Passover, we spent 18 hours outside of the Israeli consulate on the anniversary of Deir Yassin, the massacre of a village in Palestine in 1948. And it was actually an interfaith organized event. And throughout the night, we were out there the entire night, and throughout the night, every hour, we had another workshop, or we did like a BDS workshop. We had a Passover Seder. We had rituals. And we had like a sun ceremony in the morning, and it was awesome to see that other people were showing up just for specific hours, either to just support our work or because they were interested in that 1 hour of BDS, for example, or some people came just to bring us coffee or tea that were either part of the Jewish community or not. And so I think that was kind of this really monumental event for me personally, both in the work that I was doing in the community that I was living in, but also just to see that other people really show up for that work, whether they're actually placed in that community or not.
Also that we are getting more organized in different boycott, divestment, sanctions campaigns, and through that work, which isn't new, but it's definitely strengthening more in the last several months, and that is bringing us together with other organizations and other communities, and it's a really tangible and concrete way that we're using as a tool to try to engage other communities more in the work, and it is really exciting, and that is something we're definitely pushing forward.
Okay, I really like the political landscape in Philadelphia. Most of the work I've done hasn't been Palestine solidarity work. I was pretty involved in that about 5 years ago, but most of the work I've done has been around education reform, organizing in the Philadelphia public school system for issues like funding equality, teacher quality, things like that. And what I really like about the political culture in Philly, the activist culture, is a lot of the people who were involved, I think more so than most cities, are very committed to actually developing an analysis of the way the system works, really understanding the nuances and not just yelling slogans and expecting that to get somewhere, but really developing an analysis, reading books, being able to be articulate and talk to people who aren't already within the ranks of the converted. People are devoted to doing that in a way that I feel is often lacking in other places. So that's one of my favorite things about the activist culture in Philadelphia. I mean, there's a few goofy people like anywhere, but I think Philly is better than average in that regard.
I do want to go back to the spiritual reclamation, and I don't know, I'm hesitant about compartmentalizing, and I hope, you know, if people feel comfortable like talking from their experience, that's great. If not, that's also great. But I'd love to hear more about that. I know people talked today about the fringes.
Yeah. Well, fringes is, I can talk a little bit about that first, but It's a non-Zionist Havara that was started by three of our comrades in Philadelphia, and several of us have been part of that group on a consistent basis. But they do a lot of rewriting and creating liturgy that speaks to, that has no mention of nationalism and is really about rooting us in the place where we are, so bringing us back to Philadelphia by using local poets and talking about nature that's around us, and talking about liberation that takes us outside of it, outside of Philadelphia, but links us in a real way that's about connecting people. Figuring out what is sacred about what we've learned and separating that from nationalism and from Zionism and bringing us back to what is holy. And that there's several people that we know and work with who this does not speak to, are not interested in looking for a spiritual community, and then there are many of us who on a personal level are looking for that and need that, and Fringes is one way that that is available. It's also a space on a strategic level, as like many of us are doing activist work about anti-Zionism. This is actually extremely strategic in building connections with other people, where you're removing nationalism from spiritual practice, and therefore then there is this space for people to connect outside of that, and then may begin to question their why Zionism is all over everywhere else when they go to their synagogue and when they just turn on the television and everything. And separately, outside of Fringes, there are, as Philadelphia Jews for Just Peace, we have, as I was talking about, the Tu B'Shvat Seder, which is for the holiday of Tu B'Shvat, which is the celebration of the trees. And there are different practices, and like Mendel was talking about, the Passover vigil, where there's explicit political messages, which then takes it to another level of, we are still rooted in our practices as Jews, and that there needs to be a sense of togetherness and healing within these messages towards liberation. But we are very clear about what we're trying to do, which is to challenge imperialism and challenge the Zionism that is keeping us separated from Palestinians and from people in our own communities.
The part of the Trees of Reconciliation, which is the Tu B'Shvat Haggadah, that I was able to work on, and what I really appreciate about that project, which I came into it after it had already been written, but got to work with it, is the fact that, you know, it is a project with many angles at the same time. So there is, you know, a Haggadah that was written, and a service that takes place around that. And then there's also like an accompanying curriculum that we teach with a Hebrew school class. And so engage like young people directly in thinking about the connection, you know, the tradition of connection to trees in Jewish tradition, and then also looking at the deforestation project of the JNF. And then there's also like a more broad-based campaign that goes along with it, which is talking about the blue boxes that were popularized, I'm guessing like in the 50s, right, is when they first started coming out, and talking about that part of the JNF's program to raise money and also just raise a lot of support and the idea of like these well intentions with the ideas of planting trees and how those well intentions were co-opted. And so that part of the project, you know, the vision as I understand it is to someday have as many of our boxes, which are raising money to replant olive trees, and also just raising awareness about what the Blue Box campaign was really raising money for, you know, create as many of those boxes and have them in as many households as the original blue boxes were. And
you
so
plant olive trees in Palestine,
yeah,
where they've been destroyed.
Whatnot. Yeah, and so, you know, it's taking one aspect, you know, of Israeli policy and focusing on it, and then approaching getting that information out in different ways to different audiences. And so I find it to be just a really dynamic and really useful and exciting project to work on.
And I think a lot of us have our own spiritual practices or that translate to political practices in a lot of ways that bring together community, both Jewish and non. But, like, for example, a lot of us have Shabbat dinners every Friday or often, where people just come that are either Jewish or not, but just as a way to mark a week together and also just kind of take a minute to step away and realize that as part of a political practice, it's important to take care of ourselves and each other and manifest community in a way that is authentic to us as queer folks or folks that aren't always represented in other, in mainstream. So to figure out what family means and kind of remake that structure together.
Okay, hello and welcome back to Radio 613. You're listening to an interview with Ben Landau-Beispiel, Mendel Polish, Leila Macbeth, and Nova McGifford, three Jews from Philadelphia who I got a chance to speak to and talk about what's going on in their community. So I asked them what they thought about, some more thoughts about what it takes to create a vibrant fringe, which is the name of their Havra out in Philadelphia, and also to sort of expand on the idea of creating a family and community.
Yeah, I think that we, that in the group of people that we do a lot of work with as Philadelphia Jews for Just Peace, there's a lot of different, people have all kinds of different relationships with their families of origin, but that even if you, like, I have a fairly good relationship with my family, even though they know where I stand and, my, and what work I do about Palestine, doing this work in general is extremely isolating, and it's, many people have very hard relationships with their families because of especially their anti-Zionist politics, but also about being queer or being, you know, all the ways that we are not in line with our families of origin. But just that it's extremely isolating to take the stand that a lot of us have are taking, to walk down the street and to walk into a Jewish community if you're wanting to go to synagogue, if you are hungry for that. You don't feel, you're just going to feel outside of it unless you work to push it and create something that's actually going to speak for you and represent you and your values and what you need. And so that's a big part of it, is that on a very true level, we are doing this work as because it's about liberation of all people and it's about liberation of Jews. And also on a very, on personal levels, I think probably for a lot of us, that we do this work because we want to be in community with, we want to have the choice of being in community with other Jews, on a spiritual level, on just living our lives, that we can choose to have that and bring our whole selves to that space.
Maybe if anyone else wants to jump in, that's great, but maybe I'll just add, you know, a lot of the focus of this assembly is also about strengthening solidarity work, and solidarity for Palestine specifically. And, you know, there might be some questions whether doing this community building is sacrifices that are not. I tend to think that it can strengthen it, but if people disagree, that's cool. But maybe just add it on to the previous question if how people see this sort of contributing to solidarity work.
I mean, for me, I feel like it's critical to building solidarity work and networks. And part of it is just remapping a cultural experience and recreating traditions and culture and structures that are outside of what a lot of us have been regimented into, just as a result of growing up in the U.S. and Jewish and having Israel as this weird centerpiece. So I think that for me, it's been critical to the justice and solidarity work that I do, because I really strongly believe in creating the world that I want to live in my life, and feeling like everybody deserves to have access to the world that they want to live in. Not that could be misinterpreted, but I think that everybody has access to freedom and justice, and a lot of that has a lot to do with cultural production for me, and community and chosen family. And I think just in terms of Philadelphia, it is sort of an interesting landscape in that there are lots, like coming from San Francisco, where I was grew up living in apartments, and a lot of people that are in my generation live by themselves or with like one housemate. But in Philly, it's a little different because there are these giant houses, and a lot of them have been abandoned or require a lot of work and a lot, and it falls into conversation of gentrification, and a lot of white people are, like myself, are living in neighborhoods that are being gentrified, and it's really confusing, that dynamic, and it's a critical conversation. And it's also like this really interesting moment where it feels like everybody in my neighborhood is like sharing home with 4 or 5 or 6 or 12 people and creating these interesting family units. And also that conversation is constantly looming about gentrification and what that means in our communities and how to be working against that at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many opportunities for solidarity and interconnections of Palestine work with what's happening locally in Philly, and a lot of that is still in conversation, and a lot of that is happening in individual relationships and through, you know, interconnections. And so there's, and in particular with the gentrification piece, there's really fierce organizations in Philadelphia that are working on land issues, and we're in conversation with them and hopefully are building those connections stronger so that there are, there is more work that overlaps and that we are supporting, that the work is being mutually supported and connected much more visibly in Philadelphia. Because it is about land, and it is about recognizing colonization when it's happening in front of us. And we're here, we live in Philadelphia, we're in the work. And I think on a lot of levels we are very much dedicated to rooting ourselves in Philadelphia with an awareness that we are overly being misrepresented in Israel Palestine.
I feel like I've been asking myself that question a lot recently, and I've also been fortunate enough to ask people around me how they are answering that question, and I've heard a lot of really incredible wisdom about it. And feel like, you know, that sense of like, where do you draw the line between focusing your energies on, you know, action that is directly addressing like injustice the Palestinian people are experiencing and, you know, their safety needs and things like that, as opposed to work that is focused on, you know, building Jewish community, reclaiming Jewish practices. And for me, I've come to a place to step out of like prioritizing one over the other, but know that they're completely, as I see them, completely interconnected and completely a part of like those two intentions are, have to happen simultaneously. And so the question that I answer for myself is, in the picture of both of those things, where are the places I'm most useful? And to focus my energy there, and to trust in seeing that there are so many people around me who are also involved in these movements, that the places where I'm not most useful, that they will fill in. And particularly in answering the question of, you know, the importance of focusing on like building community and reclaiming practices and that kind of stuff, I find myself coming back to, you know, there are some Jewish people in the world that love Israel and are loyal to Israel because of the injustice that they carry out in the apartheid system and the racism and everything like that, but not that many. Most people are loyal to Israel because of the sense of safety, you know, in quotes, or the sense of connection to something, the sense of community, the sense of being a part of something. So it's like the positives that keep them connected despite, you know. And so for me, the project of recreating those positive connections and those spaces where people can feel at home and feel belonging feels so important. And it feels so important, like, for myself to have that in my life. And then if I'm going to ask people, you know, to pull their allegiances and pull their support out of Israel, that I can say, and there's places for you to come and join me where you can get some of those things that you're used to getting from your belonging to this type of Jewish identity that is connected to Zionism in Israel and in a different way.
Do you want to talk a bit about the workshop that you were working on at the assembly?
Which one?
With the fabric. I don't know what it was called.
Oh, sure.
How'd that go?
I worked with the Arts and Culture Programming Committee for the assembly, and we wanted to create a space where people would be able to come during the assembly and reflect a little bit on a number of different things, both the journey to get themselves here in the sense of like to get to their anti-Zionist politics, and then literally, you know, to get here to Detroit to this assembly, and, you know, sort of obstacles that they overcame in that process and things that they had to face and challenges. Also share stories about who they carry with them here, with the idea of both people that, you know, there are a lot of people here who have spent time in Palestine and West Bank and in Gaza and have made strong connections there and connected to people who do not have the ability to travel and move in the way that we do. So who are those folks that you're carrying with you through this work? who are members of your own family and communities, like, you know, specifically Jewish communities that do not want to be a part of this, that you carry with you in your heart and carry with you the hope that they will join you in this movement. And then we also were really interested in people sharing kind of at aha moments and moments of like stirring and growth and movement and transformation, to be able to come down and like express that and let that out, and also express commitments that they're making. We have, so there's like a space for people, you know, there's a tree and some space, some feet on the floor and different places for people to share those stories, and then also something that people can make as a keepsake, and that part of it, you know, is a way that you can write down, jot down some commitments that are happening for you here and keep it with you to kind of remind you, and once you leave the space. And then we also created something that it uses fabric to visually like represent a fire, and ask people to participate in a fire ritual that is based off of the idea that when lighting Shabbat candles, you put into the fire and burn up things about the previous week that you want to let go of, and then you take from the fire kind of the light of things that you want to keep with you. And so like asking people to share something of the process of that, identifying within themselves and within their lives what are the things that you let go of, that you give up, that are not yours to have, that are privileges given to you, that you recognize as things that don't belong to you. And so put those things into the fire as things that you want to burn up, and then what is a piece of your process in knowing what is yours to claim and what is yours to stand strong in. So that was the idea for the art space.
Okay, folks, so that was an interview that Avi did with four radical Jews from Philadelphia at the recent convergence of Jews confronting racism and Israeli apartheid in Detroit. We're just about nearing the end of the show, but before we go, just, you know, following up on the interview, you know, there was some talk in that interview of Philadelphia Jews for a Just Peace. If you want to check out their website, it's phillyjjp.org. So that's phillyjjp.org. Also, Avi has some other great audio that we'll be sharing with you in the weeks to come, and commenting on the subject of spiritual reclamation. So that's what is to come in the next few weeks. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will see you next week. Or no, you will hear us next week.